Hello, hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Skeptics and Seekers Sunday Sermon Shorts. This is an article from the Christian Post. It's an opinion piece, Navigating the Tension of Faith and Doubt. This is a subject I've written about quite a bit, and so it caught my eye, and I just want to discuss a couple of points. In the article, let me do a little bit of reading. I'm a follower of Jesus, so I guess that makes me a person of faith. I attribute the presence and power of God to many things that go on in my life. Yet some would argue this has nothing to do with God, but is merely the result of luck and coincidence. I guess that's always possible. But when you think about it, luck and coincidence are nothing more than alternative forms of faith. Okay, I'm going to stop right there and say, I disagree. It's not. Christians are always trying to find a way to put the shoe on the other foot, to put the atheist in the same position that they are. They try to quote prominent atheists as if we had prophets. They have prophets. We can quote their prophets legitimately. They cannot quote our prophets legitimately because we don't have any. They have a religion that they can't get out from under, so they say that we have a religion. And they will just define any worldview pretty much as a religion. And the same is true with faith. They have faith in God. You know, we have faith in something else. It's a very thinly veiled attempt. However, he does cite a definition from Webster's. So I will give him that. And I will just have to say, I disagree with both him and Webster. So here's the quote here from the article. Webster defines luck as a force that brings good fortune or adversity, and coincidence as the occurrence of events that happen at the same time by accident, but seem to have some connection. There's absolutely no way to prove the existence of a force or an accident that seems to have a mystical connection. These are alternative faith paths to explain the unexplainable without God. All right. So I don't believe that luck is a force. It may be for some people. I don't think that's the common understanding of luck. It's just something that happens in nature where, not through any work of your own, something good happens or something bad happens. We call that good luck or bad luck. All right. When someone says good luck, they are not imparting a force. This is not a secret incantation. This is just a way of saying, I hope it goes well for you. That's it. So I don't know where Webster is thinking. It could be a Christian who wrote this definition. But that would be wrong. And as far as coincidence, the definition didn't say anything about a mystical connection. He added the word mystical. It's just things that seem to have a connection. There are all kinds of things that happen concurrently that seem to have a connection. There's nothing mystical about that. But here, the problem isn't Webster. It's the Christian reading into it with his own worldview, so that he can paint the skeptic with his liabilities. You see, you believe in supernatural things too, is his argument there. So, no. He goes on, let's get to something more interesting. So, do I ever wonder if my faith in God is misplaced? Sure. Because while I'm a person of faith, I find I'm also a person of doubt. Let me pause there for a moment. This is where it's always interesting for me when Christians start talking about doubt. Because I believe that doubt is completely incoherent in a Christian worldview. Always have. And as this Christian expresses it, it seems completely incoherent to me. Because if you listen to William Lane Craig, which I have a lot, and covered William Lane Craig a lot in his formulation of the sensus divinitatis, he believes that it is a thing within that is so strongly of God that it cannot be mistaken for anything else. It cannot be doubted. When God is speaking to you through the sensus divinitatis, you know it's God. Now, I disagree with that idea, but that's kind of a Christian idea. William Lane Craig is not the first one to say this sort of thing, but I think he says it more strongly than anyone else. And if that's the case, then whither the doubt? Where does it come from? Isn't the sensus divinitatis there with you all the time, every second of the day? It's kind of like a person spending time with their wife every day, all the time. You don't doubt that your wife exists. You don't. You can't. It is impossible to doubt that your wife exists. They are with you all the time. You are in public with her. Other people see her. She has conversations. She cleans up your messes, things of that nature. It is undoubtable. Undoubtable. To doubt the presence of your wife or life partner who lives with you is to court mental illness. Okay? So if that is the presence of God, then to doubt it, I think, is to court mental illness. I don't see where there is room for the doubt. Okay. Sometimes the realities of life are just so unsettling, it makes me want to join the doubter crowd and cry, "Where is God? If he is real and loving, why doesn't he do something?" I wanted to read that part so that you understand exactly what it is he's doubting, which is what I've said in the past. They're doubting the actual existence of God. That there are times in a Christian's life when they don't even know if God exists. You know, if you're there, then why this? And they question that. Once again, where do you justifiably question whether God exists if you have an actual tangible relationship with his God? How is that possible? You see, if it's possible, then I think that you have to say that someone who doubts God's existence and is not a Christian is also justified. You can't justify your doubts and then condemn someone else's. The next paragraph, even more interesting, I think. I've never seen God with my eyes or heard him with my ears, which is fertile soil for doubt. So again, he's giving himself a justification for his doubt. Why does that justification not work for others? So he goes on and maybe partially answers this. So is doubt a disqualifier of faith? I don't think so. Note this next sentence. Doubt is about questioning, while unbelief is about rejection. Let me stop you right there. That is a dishonest kind of doubt. Right, if that's your definition of doubt, it's a dishonest doubt, and you're being dishonest with yourself. And you're probably being dishonest with other people when you say you have doubts. Because doubts are not just questions. Doubts must have the freedom to form logical conclusions. But what he's actually saying is it's okay to doubt, it's okay to question, as long as you come up with the right answer that God exists. As long as you keep coming up with that, then it's okay to doubt. And I say that's not doubt. Or if it's some form of doubt, it's dishonest doubt. It's completely dishonest. Let me read the rest of that paragraph before I go back. It's pretty normal to question things we don't understand. Okay, so you're saying you don't understand God. Once again, I don't understand your relationship with something that you don't understand. And there's a long list of things I don't understand about God. Yeah, gotcha. Yet this is to be expected, since there is no way my little two-cylinder brain can comprehend all there's to know about the infinite God. Well, once again, that's just a faith claim that God is so infinite and you are so small. This is yet another way of you just kind of justifying your doubt and getting over it. Well, I don't understand, and God's so big, I can't possibly understand, so it's natural to have doubts, but as long as I keep landing on the yes answer, then it's okay. I said I'd come back to this. He says, doubt is about questioning, while unbelief is about rejection. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. And once again, that is a poison pill for Christians. And it's a way of saying, don't you dare doubt. Not really. Don't have any real doubt. Because if you follow your doubt to a logical conclusion that is not the yes, God exists answer, then what that means is you have rejected God to his face. Not true. Not true. In fact, I would say that most people who are skeptics or agnostics, soft atheists, if you are weak atheists, if you prefer that term, I don't, but it's out there, they are not rejecting God. They are simply no longer able to positively affirm that there is a God. As a Christian, you positively affirm that there is a God. As a doubter, you're just not sure. But if you follow your doubts further and you land on an answer that says, you know, I just can't find justification for my positive affirmation of a God, then the Christian says, well, you've rejected God. No, you haven't. What the Christian is saying is you haven't proven him enough. I'm not saying he's not real, but what I have been presented is not good enough, and I recognize that I don't have good enough reasons to positively affirm it and order my life around it. Does not mean you've rejected the idea. But that said, some of us have rejected the idea because we have followed our conclusions, our research and life experience, study, questioning, talking to other people. We followed that to a conclusion. We made a decision that we don't think God exists. We actually don't think God exists. Even that is not, I think, what the Christian means by rejecting God. We just don't think he exists, okay? It's not that we couldn't be proven wrong about that, but it's going to take more than you arguing to prove that God exists to us. And God is perfectly capable, if he wants to make it clear that he exists. All right, so we've come to a conclusion that we don't think God exists. But that is a conclusion, an acceptable conclusion of honest doubt and honest questioning. You see, if you can only question in a way that gets you to, yes, God exists, you're not really questioning. I'm going to skip down to the end of this article. I do encourage that you read it. I'll try to remember to post the link. All right, he says after several paragraphs, I'm choosing faith over doubt because even in my darkness, the sun has always risen again. And I'm choosing faith in a loving God over faith in luck or coincidence. No one has faith in luck or coincidence. Over faith in luck or coincidence, because while one gives me an inner sense of hope and peace, the other leaves me cold and at the mercy of a big, lifeless nothing. It's a no-brainer. That's how he finishes. Okay. I don't mean to pick apart someone's faith. They can faith any way they want to for any reason they want to. But if you're looking for good justifications for your faith, you don't have one here. You have landed on one of the classic worst justifications for your faith. You don't like the consequences. The consequences of no God make you uncomfortable. It makes you queasy. You don't care for it. And so, you would rather just believe in God because it makes you feel better. Do not express that reason for your faith in an evangelical way, as if that should convince anyone else. In fact, it shouldn't even convince Christians to hang on to their faith. Christians, listen to me. If someone is telling you that the reason to hang on to your faith over doubt is because it makes them personally feel better and it might make you personally feel better, that's actually a knock against faith. Because that's a bad reason for faith. And if the only thing people can give you at the end of the day is a bad reason for faith, you should reevaluate your faith. Okay, Christians, what do you think? Are you with this guy on this? Skeptics, what do you think? Hey, you guys know what to do. Skepticsandseekers.squarespace.com. Log in your Discuss account and discuss away. You can send me an email at skepticsandseekers@gmail.com. And until next time, I will see you in the comments. In the meantime, I'm out.